Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show, hour two on this Tuesday, which means we just finished talking today, part two. Not kidding, folks. He told us. We had talked to him on some Tuesday previously, and the next week he was like, yeah, I got a call from a sitting SEC head coach. Listened to the show, and he had some questions, and so I got a client. Whoever it is, you want to get in touch with him, is Dave Bartu, man. He's as up close and real and in it as anybody in that consulting and recommendation game, so I appreciate him coming on. If we go back in time, Brigham Young may have been saved from a pretty inglorious existence right now, somewhat not of their own doing. If we go back to, over the last almost 20 years, the climate around the Brigham Young Athletic Department has varied as an EKG sometimes between, well, we want to join a conference, so we'll throw something out. We wish we were still independent like back in the day. Or, no, we're glad we're in a conference. Or, no, maybe let's get out of a conference. Or let's go to a new conference. All over the map with Brigham Young. And when it comes to college football, which drives everything, if you want to go back and Google your computer, BYU had gotten into expansion mode back in like the early 2010s. And they had the PowerPoint ready, man. They had the laser pointer. They had like everything. They had the multimedia presentation. It was ready. They would show anyone why BYU will be a great addition to your conference. And so if you want to go back and Google your computer and time frame to 2011 or 12 or 13 when programs like, you know, Missouri and Rutgers were getting the fast pass, Brigham Young was like, yes, we would consider that as well. We have a full presentation. Who would like to see it? And in 2015, BYU was in the wake, the aftermath of that whole Longhorn Network, Texas and Oklahoma may go to the Pac-12, blah, 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 and that wasn't going to work. So maybe the Pac-12 was looking for some consolation prizes. Can you imagine in 2015 a scenario that was presented to BYU? If they would have agreed to it by, for instance, today's standards, BYU actually made a presentation to the Big 12, I want to say, in 2015. And the Big 12 looked at it and was like, you know what? Actually, we decided we're not going to expand after all. And so at that point, BYU kind of walked back to Provo and said, well, all right, we'll maybe just revisit this whole thing later. But because of a snub, a shutdown, we thought we were looking to expand. Actually, we think for right now, we're going to just hold steady. We did not get raided and lose half of our conference to the Pac-12. That's what actually happened. And so the Big 12 was like, Brigham Young, love you, mean it, but right now, just nothing. Can you imagine if BYU would have continued its presentation and joined the Pac-12 with the understanding that you won't get any money for 9 years? That beginning in 2024, you can join the Pacific Conference with however many members. You won't get any money up until then. Beginning in 24, you're a full member of the Pacific Variable Conference. And, hey, you're in for full TV money then. Folks, I guess that could have happened. They wanted to join somebody. And remember, the PAC-ish conference was considered the predator, the consumer at that point. And they didn't get Texas and OU, and so they kind of backtracked and said, what do we do now? But it's a position of strength, so we'll decide. Folks, BYU could have very easily become so desperate. We'll join the Pac-12, do it now, play all our games, and then we'll start getting paid in 2024. There wouldn't be any Pac-12 left for them to start getting paid on. I have brought up the scenario, like SMU broached it. They introduced it. How about 7 years of no money? And the ACC was like, did they really offer us that? Well, they must be desperate. Like, you never show your cards, folks. SMU led with 7 years. And the ACC is like, oh, slow down. Syracuse is like, sold. Wake Forest is like, wow. Yeah, this is awesome. Tallahassee and Chapel Hill and Clemson, a few others went, hang on. How about nine? SMU is like, okay. I have brought up the idea that there's not going to be much, and I can almost guarantee you, folks, there's not going to be much ACC. SMU, they have got to be realizing this themselves right now. There's not going to be much of an ACC left for them to join and start getting paid in 9 years. And if you don't believe me, Clemson has decided to walk around the neighborhood now yelling, this place sucks, don't buy here. You can only have so much of that going on, even if you don't have any real legal recourse. It's just bad for everybody, especially when it's the two most expensive houses down at the end of the neighborhood. Florida State has filed suit against the ACC. We know that. They don't have any legal standing. Like, they have none. No, in fact, it's a convoluted, ridiculous conversation that they're making. And the ACC is correct in their response. But Florida State, more than anything, they're running that metal cup back and forth across the bars. More than anything, they're like, we're just going to be public and loud. I have said the most redneck thing in existence is arguing in the front yard. Florida State has decided we're going to argue in the front yard. Everybody's seen that. Like, you're like, just get in the house. Just go in the house. That Florida State's like, no. We're going to do this right here. Well, Clemson has decided that give them some of that action as well. In a move just like what's in Tallahassee, where there is not a realistic issue of, hey, maybe we can prevail in court and our claim is true and we'll get out of the AC. This is all strategic. In a move shadowing what Florida State did, Clemson has filed lawsuit against the ACC. They did it in Pickens County in South Carolina. It's about 28 pages in complaint. It's very similar to what Florida State filed. It's the grant of rights, and this is egregious, and we're being violated, and so out. We want out. What they really want is the same thing Florida State is after, which is not out right now because this is so unfair. They all signed it in 2013. This is so unfair. We want out right now. No, you don't. You just want out sooner than the end of the contract, and you want out for less money. That's all this is. And we've decided that we're going to be loud and public and ugly, and you might even know where a body is. I don't know. But now it's Florida State and Clemson. Like, if North Carolina, and I don't know, would North Carolina sully themselves? Like, there is something. Like, in baseball, the managers don't fight, right? Like, the goalies don't fight in hockey. Like, would North Carolina get involved in this?
I don't know whether or not they would, because at this point, I don't know if you're North Carolina, do you even need to? I mean, you have here a situation. You mentioned it, Chuck. FSU filed in Florida. Now you've got Clemson filing in Pickens County. So they're trying to have the home court advantage. Obviously, the ACC says no. Under the terms of our agreement, all these disputes are to be litigated in North Carolina. So right now, we can't even decide where this thing's being held. And you've obviously seen a tendency in state legislatures recently to try and do everything they can to help the home team. So your guess is as good as mine as to what the South Carolina legislature or the Florida legislature could do to try and get involved in this stuff.
Yeah, but it's not, and the goal isn't even to win. It's not to go to court. The goal is to just be loud and public, and I hate it here.
Yeah, I just don't know if North Carolina has any reason, especially when they don't have that issue. I think if you're North Carolina, you can kind of say, hey, let them fight. You remember when Nick Saban was pushing the issue of tempo and whatnot, but Brett Bielema, Saban made some comments, but Bielema decided to just flat out cannonball into the pool and make himself sort of the face of it. And so Saban was kind of willing, hey, well, I'll let Brett be the guy who talks about this all the time. He can go be that guy, and I'll just have kind of voiced, yeah, you know, he may have a point there. I feel like North Carolina is happy to let FSU and Clemson be the Bielema role here, and they can just sit back and see what happens.
If, I guess you can save the legal filing, and the point is already being made by the biggest two, maybe you can't. I'll use a NASCAR term. I don't know. Maybe you can just draft behind Clemson and Florida State and get the benefit. And as I said, I don't know if North Carolina even has to get involved in this. But at this point, it's a story in a second locale. And it's without the real purpose of what a lawsuit is supposed to be, you would assume on face, this is just to pressure a shorter deal for less money. So if this were to actually, like if the ACC said, yep, let's go to court right now, I think Florida State and Clemson would probably want to amend their filings. But otherwise, this is just going to be another member of the neighborhood telling you how bad it is and you don't want this and don't join the swim tennis and the buffet on Sunday's no good. So when you have these two programs who have the most to gain by at least a harmonious continuance while they're in it, they're like, no, we're going to blow this whole thing up. That's a really tough position for conference leadership to be in. All right, we're going to break, come back, and continue with hour two next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Rolling through this Tuesday, Chuck Oliver Show, doing what we do, talking college football. And we are full up on the Duncan Newsmaker line today. Dave Bartu, appreciate him coming in. College Football Matrix, he's the guy with the laptop, the ones and zeros, and teams and ADs and head coaches call him when they have staffing needs. And he helps them punch up money-wise, and he can moneyball the whole thing for them. There is, I don't think any prospect, any position, but there's no quarterback certainly as polarizing in this year's NFL draft, especially in the first round, especially like, I don't know, top 10, than J.J. McCarthy. I got a buddy of mine who's a Minnesota Vikings fan, and he asked me, "What are we, Sam Darnold?" I was like, "No, you're right. You don't want him." He's like, "What are we going to do?" I was like, "Blah, blah, dib, blah, J.J. McCarthy." I thought he was going to get a paper bag to hyperventilate into. Like, he could not believe J.J. McCarthy, and I was like, "No, that's a thing, man." And there are folks who just don't want – they don't understand it. So, and I don't understand enough to say yes or no. I'm just telling you that what the general expectation is. We're going to talk about Michigan going forward, but we got to cover some – NFL draft views first from Maize and Blue Review. It's a Rivals joint. Trevor McHugh, welcome back, friend. How are you today?
Hey, Chuck. Good to hear you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can we talk a little J.J. McCarthy before we talk about Michigan? Have you seen some of that response? There are fan bases that are like taking it as a personal affront that J.J. McCarthy may be viewed as their team's next quarterback. I'm like, well, he's a big kid with a strong arm who won a lot at the highest level. Like, I like all of that. He did not throw the ball for 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns, but I was like, it's not really about numbers. Have you heard any of those really widely varying opinions from NFL fans about him?
Yeah, Chuck, for folks here in Ann Arbor, this is nothing new. J.J. has been a polarizing quarterback for the last couple years. Rival fan bases have just been distraught by any praise or, you know, good things said about JJ, and that's just transitioned now into the NFL draft. So, yeah, I think a lot of people, you look at the numbers and you're shocked to maybe see the conversation around McCarthy. There's this sentiment for folks that don't watch a lot of Michigan that think Jim Harbaugh couldn't trust J.J. McCarthy, that he wasn't good enough, so they had to rely on the run game. But the more you dig into it, this is about ability versus opportunity. And he has the ability to be an NFL quarterback. He didn't have the passing opportunities at Michigan, but that didn't have anything to do with a trust factor. This is just Jim Harbaugh loving to run the football. In fact, Harbaugh called J.J. the best quarterback that's ever played at Michigan. Pretty high praise when you consider the folks that have come through that program.
Continue with our Trost reporter from Michigan from Amazing Blue Review. His rivals is Trevor McHugh. All right, well, let's talk about this year's team, and we'll get to the quarterback. Let's talk about the coaches, first of all. I'll give Sharon more credit. He found a way to make a running back coach hire big news. Talk about that thing with Alford.
Oh, yeah. There was talk right away that the hire was going to be splashy, and I wondered, how do you make a running back hire splashy? We've seen, you know, head coaches taking steps down to like OC, but a running back coach, how do you make a running back coach hire splashy? Well, you go and take Tony Alford from Ohio State. He's been there for 9 years, their running back coach, and he's already been a part of Ohio State's spring practices. So it's the best rivalry in all of sports, and man, was it on display in the last week after Alford was announced. Of course, Ohio State fans will tell you they wanted him gone anyway. They're not really upset. But you look at the tweet responses and the things that have been said to him, the rivalry just never stops. It's year-round. An incredible move by Moore, rivalry aside. Alford is obviously a really strong recruiter, has a good reputation as a running back coach. Not so much the last few seasons, which is why Ohio State fans are saying they're not too upset. We're going to find out if that had to do with Alford losing touch, or is this just more of a change from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day in Columbus?
Why did Mike Hart have to get going?
I think multiple things are true. I think there is some resentment on his half that he wasn't considered for the head coach and then not considered for offensive coordinator. I'll tell you, there was probably a time a few years ago where if a quick transition had occurred like this with Harbaugh, that Hart probably would have been considered. But in that time frame, Sharon Moore has gone on to win 2 Joe Moore Awards as an offensive line coach, moved to co-offensive coordinator, then sole offensive coordinator, and then win 4 games, including 3 of the biggest ones as an interim head coach last year. So he's really earned that job in the last couple of years. In terms of OC, he trusted Kirk Campbell moving forward, and he really wants to focus on recruiting. And it's just, there's just kind of a disagreement maybe about the future of that position. And then Hart's been dealing with something personally that took him away from the program for a few months. He's now back from a leave, and he hasn't really gone into those details. We don't feel comfortable doing it yet, but just a lot of things in play, and change made sense.
Real quick, and I don't care about the salacious stuff at all. Greg Scruggs, who's coaching D-line in spring, and do you have just a guess on what the outcome of this is going to be? It's 2024. I mean, we have to fire people for stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. We don't know all of the details yet around the entire OW arrest that happened on Saturday, but this isn't Scruggs' first time either. He did have an issue in college and a lowered charge when he was in Seattle. So it feels like there's going to be a path for him to come back, but obviously if he were to be let go, that would not be a shock. Right now, Kevin Wilkins, who was the linebacker coach that was fired by the New York Giants, which led to Wink Martindale being let go, is helping out with defensive line, as well as LaTroy Lewis, a guy that's been around the program for a long time. But, yeah, Scruggs is currently suspended, and we're just kind of waiting to see what Ward Manuel Moore end up deciding.
Wrapping up with Trevor McHugh, Amazing Blue Review. I'm kind of laughing because we had to go through, like, all of, like, the accounting, the old business, to kind of get to, okay, so who's the quarterback going to be? And if Kirk Campbell's DNA is all over this, what's that going to look like on a typical Saturday?
Yeah, the biggest question, right? Full circle. JJ is gone, and there are 5 different quarterbacks currently in spring practice with a chance to win that starting job. They all bring different positives, and the one thing none of them really bring is starter experience. So you've got a 7-year player in Jack Tuttle who hasn't been a starter. Alex Orji, who you got to see last year, used as a runner. They know they can trust him in big moments, but we haven't seen him pass. And Jaden Denegal is another prospect similar, and Jaden Davis, star freshman as well, being considered. I don't think the offense is going to change very much from what we've seen. Sharon Moore has been using his hashtag smash since he took over. They're going to keep running the football, that's for sure. But is it just short passes and kind of what we've seen from McCarthy, or is the run game, a running quarterback, seen more with somebody like Orji, or just the prototypical stand in the pocket quarterback like we saw with Cade McNamara in 2021? I think it's going to be one version of that. I don't think you're going to see anything crazy different. This team's going to win with defense, and they're going to win running the football.
This is just personal knowledge. And by the way, there's a lot of different right answers here. What is the angle now, strength and conditioning, and specifically with linemen? And you can break it down for the offensive line if you want to. But some people, we just want five redwoods and we want to mash people and we're big and huge and it's 1993. Some people are like, no, it's explosion, it's movement, it's et cetera. Where is the Michigan program right now? I think I know.
Yeah, for a long time, well, I shouldn't say a long time, but as of late, they were definitely like, we want the big boys, right? Mm-hmm. We saw a massive change in terms of size on the offensive line, something Michigan kind of got away from for a little bit. That hasn't changed a ton. If you look at the current recruits coming in, they're all 6'6", 6'8". But there does seem to be a little bit of a movement to athletic ability. We've seen Michigan have strong interiors with guards and center. Got exposed a little bit last year with tackles because they basically had run-blocking guards playing tackle. So coming into this camp, five new starters, have a pretty good idea who the interior is going to be. There is some debate and question on the outside with the tackles. You know, a game like Penn State where Chop Robinson literally prevented Michigan from passing the ball because they just could not slow him down with their tackles.
Oh. All right, brother, I appreciate it. It's great stuff, man. Thank you so much, Trevor.
You too, Chuck. Have a good one.
Trevor McHugh, Amazing Blue Review. So many things going on, and then we finally got around to quarterback and replacing a guy who's going to be – he's going to be a first-round pick, and that doesn't even really sum up with J.J. McCarthy. It's – I think he's going to be top 10, and I'm saying I think, like, somebody trades into the top 10 to, I don't know, 9 with the Bears. They have 9, I think. I know the Falcons are 8. Like, depending on who you think you need to jump, like, Minnesota's looking around. Sam Darnold, do you really want that to be your plan? Sometimes, you know, stuff happens. It was, I'm going to say, maybe 5 years ago, and the Dolphins really, Jay Cutler was not the plan. And then on, I don't know, August 11th, guy steps on a sprinkler head or a yard marker or whatever, and hey, Jay, you want to come out of retirement? He's like, yeah, cool. So that wasn't the plan, though. You can't have Sam Darnold be the plan. And so they're a real good candidate, and they're like five more of, I'm going to trade up, and I'm going to get the quarterback, and well, these three are gone, and I got news. The next one ain't Michael Penix or Bo Nix. Folks, it's J.J. McCarthy. That's a wrap. That's done. This is all of that Mac Jones thing back 3 years ago, which he just got dealt for a sixth-round pick, and in his words, to, quote, get the train back on the tracks. But that's going to happen with J.J. McCarthy. He's a top-10 pick, folks. That's done.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
God bless South Carolina. I mean that. Whatever it is they're doing, it is a wicked brew required to succeed in recruiting right now. And if you're in a state, Will Muschamp said it so many times, Chuck, there's 6.5 million people in Atlanta. We got 6.5 million in the whole state. We have to go recruit elsewhere. It's like, yes, coach, I know. In a state without a huge super number of high school five stars every year and without a super huge number of, like, I don't know, Fortune 100 companies. And now it's all money, money, money. South Carolina, they're making it kind of work, man. They really are. They're picking and choosing where they're going to spend, and there's a lot of optimism. And the SEC just got a lot more difficult. So, and they just lost an NFL quarterback, and so it continues to be optimistic, though, coming out of the program. So much of the vibe, so much of the feel. And like I said, there are NFL guys who not only are leaving for the NFL, there's like an NFL guy who left for Ole Miss. And so there's some of that as well. And they continue to kind of make it happen. I want to welcome on right now from Gamecock Central. It's an on-3 thing. Wes Mitchell. Wes, welcome back. How was your Tuesday?
It's going great, man. Sun is shining. Football is happening. There's basketball to talk about here in Columbia, too. So we're happy, man. Hope you're doing well, too.
Yeah, nothing but good. Let's just talk. You can go philosophy and you can go, you know, bird's eye if you'd like to. But just comment on the import of what I was just saying, that there's only 6.5 million in the state and that there's not a whole lot of super high level global commerce in, you know, headquartered in South Carolina, and name, image, likeness, that matters. But tell me how much. Tell me how much those two factors, how much is Shane Beamer and the staff having to punch through that ceiling?
Yeah, I think everybody out there to certain degrees is trying to figure out how to manage everything you're talking about. And some states obviously are going to have advantages. And I think if you're South Carolina, you got to be kind of smart about how you pick and choose what players you're going after. You got to be smart about how you manage the transfer portal. I think we all know NIL and the portal are kind of aligned up quite a bit. And, I think something South Carolina's tried to do is that, yeah, they're not a big state, but the university is here in the capital of the state of South Carolina. And you've got some local businesses that want to be involved in NIL aspects as well. So they've tried to leverage that, to kind of help with some of those NIL deals that don't necessarily involve having to keep going back to your fan base and your big donors and saying, hey, man, we need more. So everybody's still learning, I think, but they actually have done a really good job, I think, of just managing everything that goes along with that here in South Carolina. And I think are kind of middle in the pack right now when it comes to the SEC as far as how I see their NIL stuff going from a big picture standpoint.
All right, a little departing business. I'm doing this with a lot of folks. If you've got a quarterback, I want to know. I learned about the last thing I want, and I commented on at the end of September last year. I was like, folks, Spencer Rattler's tough. I was like, and I want my quarterback to go his whole 2, 3, or 4 years, and I never find out if he's tough or not. I never want him hit. I was like, folks, Spencer Rattler's tough. Tell me what you think in NFL. You know what an NFL guy looks like. Is he a Sunday quarterback?
I 100% think that he is. Now, I think the fact that these NFL franchises are a little bit more forgiving about size at the quarterback position these days than they were 20 years ago, I think is going to help him quite a bit as well. But watching him up close throw the football for 2 seasons now, I was at his pro day last week with all the NFL teams there. You know, I think he's going to come in probably to a situation where he's not going to be asked to be the guy right off the bat. But, I mean, watching so many NFL games this past year where backups were playing, you know, second string guys were having to start, and comparing their just natural talent to what Rattler can do, I think if he lands in the right spot, which is always an important caveat, then he absolutely can be one of those guys that starts out as a backup, gets his chance at some point, and then some team says, look, we're going to give this guy a shot to be our guy, because everybody's obviously looking for a QB. So, yeah, I think he can do it, man. I'm kind of excited to see what that ends up looking like.
All right, against that backdrop, South Carolina, who had never gotten a quarterback, I think Stephen Garcia was probably the highest they had ever punched up, like, directly out of high school. But Spence Rattler was the number one kid in America. He started at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. He never played poorly out there. He transferred, and you got 2 years of that guy. There's supposed to be a little, you know, tear in the eye as he leaves town. Everybody in Columbia is like, Lenora Sellers can't wait. Tell me about Lenora Sellers. Tell me if it really is the blue sky. What's that look like with him?
Yeah, man. So this time last year, we do our asking around and our reporting, and we keep hearing, man, this Sellers kid could be special. This Sellers kid, you know, high upside, big kid, can throw it, can run it. Complete package as far as your kind of modern offenses where they want QBs that can extend plays. And, you know, we start hyping him up. Well, at this point, we're kind of back on the other side of it. We're saying, all right, guys, he is a redshirt freshman, has only played in 3 games. He's going to be asked to, we all believe, be the starting quarterback this year and take on a huge role. So I think everything you've heard out of Columbia about the talent level, the ability, it's all true. Like this guy, I firmly believe will be their starting quarterback this year. Now, I do think we all are going to have to set those expectations a little bit fairly that, like you said in the open, you're playing in a league where it's only going to get tougher. South Carolina's schedule is always brutal, but I would say it's extra brutal this year. And there's going to be a learning curve here. So I think that the big thing fans, especially here in Columbia, are going to have to remember is that he will still be a redshirt freshman who is trying to learn as he goes. And frankly, I was putting together like a projected depth chart for our members earlier this week, and it just hit me how many different spots on this offense that South Carolina will be replacing guys from last year. So I do think it's going to be a little bit of a thing on offense where they're going to have to progress as the season goes on.
All right, work me through the running back depth chart, because best I can figure, it's Rocket, it's the transfer from North Texas who has played a lot. It's Matthew Fuller, who's like a top 20 running back in the class. It's Juju. There's a lot of names, man. Work through this with me.
Yeah, I think they actually, especially compared to last year, man, they should feel really good about that position. We actually sat down with Dow Loggins a little bit last week. He didn't mention hardly any players by name, yet he mentioned Rocket Sanders and Oscar Attaway. And that kind of caught my eye. I think this is going to be much more of a run-based offense this year, and I think it's going to be first and foremost built around those two guys. Now, Rocket is still coming off of surgery, so he's going to be limited in the spring. But fast forward, you know, 6 months, you don't bring in Rocket Sanders to hang out on the sideline. He's going to be your guy. I think Attaway is second. I think you'll have a good competition for kind of what would be that third string guy. Let me tell you about somebody else to know, Jawarn Howell, wearing number 22. He's a transfer in from SC State. He was their leading rusher last year.
Right.
And just he just was like, you throw on some highlights and it's very obvious that this is a guy who can play at the SEC level. From what I've heard, he's a little bit raw, but in time, you know, I think you can maybe fast forward a year, year and a half down the road. We may be talking about Howell as being a future starter at South Carolina. So I think between Juju McDowell, who returns, and Jawarn Howell, they got another kid from Georgia, DJ Braswell, that played a little bit as a freshman last year. All those guys will kind of be fighting it out, I think, for that third spot. And then, like you said, Matt Fuller, he ended up being a highly rated guy before it was all over with. And so they've gone from that being a huge question mark. A lot of those guys are new, but I think they're proven enough, and that's a position where there's usually not quite as much of a filling out period. A lot of times you can kind of hit the ground runner at running back. So I think they feel good there.
Yeah, first practice, it's pitch right, pitch left. I mean, it's we're running. And Attaway, the guy from North Texas, I mean, give me a 22-year-old grown man running back, 23-year-old with a couple thousand yards rushing in D1 college football. I like all of that. So a lot of options, whereas last year they really didn't have that. All right, so talk about big, freaky Nick Harbor. And if it turns into what it can be, It looked really, really intriguing last year. When does it go to really productive and consistent?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question right there. And I don't know if we know the answer yet. I think looking out there today, I did not. Now, we were at practice for like 15 minutes this morning and did not see him out there. He is currently managing. This is a big part of the recruiting process with him. Playing football and running track. They're in their outdoor track season right now. He actually put down a blazing 200-meter time over the weekend in Myrtle Beach and won that event. So he is right in the thick of that right now. So I think the big question for him, how much time will he be able to get around the football team this spring? Coach Beamer was very happy with his ability to manage it this offseason, kind of doing both. But I do think he's a kid. You want him getting as many reps out there actually in the offense, catching footballs, you know, even just the seeing how the ball comes out of Lenoris Sellers' hands. Like, he wants these guys getting as many reps as possible. So I think at a position receiver, which is, I think, a huge question how that's going to play out, I'll be very curious. Beamer's actually about to talk right now, so I'm sure he's going to be asked, hey, how do you see the management of Harbor's time and reps and all that with the two sports going on. So I think that's another fascinating element of what South Carolina has going on offense.
All right, well, Wes, be honest. Do you want to answer a question about Dylan Stewart, or do you want to go listen to the coach talk?
I can answer a question about Dylan Stewart.
All right, talk about big, giant Dylan Stewart, because he's a freshman, which that's always dicey in the SEC, but he's an edge, and so there's a chance and first step and quickness and all that. What can Dylan Stewart really do this year?
Well, I think you just answered the question, but, you know, he has all those things, and I think the question for him right now is he going to be an every-down guy yet, or is he going to be a pass rush specialist? Because I think at the very least, especially when you look at kind of that position last year and what happened there and their need for guys who can just kind of defeat a one-on-one block and get to the quarterback, Dylan Stewart brings all those things. I think he's already naturally probably your most talented pass rusher on this team. I think as the spring progresses, as we get into preseason, we'll start to find out how much he's in the actual sort of depth chart as far as an every down player. I think right now you look at that spot, a guy who actually transferred from Georgia Tech, Kyle Kennard. I look for him to play a big role kind of in that edge defensive end spot too. But Dylan Stewart, like I said, man, I don't know if there's a guy that just has that burst already on the roster, has more burst than Dylan. I don't think that guy exists. So they need that. And he certainly is going to get every chance to show he can play a bunch this year.
If it's Gamecock football, Wes Mitchell knows it. I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you.
All right, guys. Y'all be going, okay?
Yes, sir. On threes, where are you going to find him? Gamecock Central again, Wes Mitchell. And so they've got a five-star lineman, and that's not every day. And so it's a five-star defensive end who, I can't remember this, and I'm trying to. Heath, does South Carolina, they have helmet stickers?
I don't believe that's something they do right now.
Yeah, I don't think they have anything on the back of the helmet right now. And there have been times everybody's had, you know, it comes and goes. But if this were a place where there's helmet stickers, and because Wes was saying, yeah, I don't know if they work him into a three-down play, it would be extremely rare for a freshman lineman, even on the edge, a freshman lineman in the conference to be a starter anywhere on the line. Be very, very rare. Like, Derek Barnett sort of Jadeveon Clowney stuff. It happens, sure. It's the SEC. I mean, you got, you know, just freaks. But it's a really, really complete different sort of player who can show up in the Southeastern Conference and is like, hey, I'm here to take somebody's job. And they do it. Because on an SEC roster, you've already got dudes. So could he do that? Sure. But Wes is like, it'd be a stretch because he's like most 18-year-olds in the SEC who aren't Jadeveon. But you can snipe. You absolutely can set that kid on the edge, and I mean like in a wide technique, and all of a sudden a tackle who he's already in a stance, he can't move, and he realizes I'm about a half step away from where I won. Ball just got snapped, and that kid is, he got to my hip, and then he bent, he turned. And he just, at freshman, came in on 3rd and 8, and I haven't seen him before, and I didn't recognize he's going to line up that one, so I just did it wrong. And so he beat me. Folks, do you know how many, if they gave out helmet stickers, he might play 17 snaps a game and get 3 helmet stickers. Not 61 or whatever. He might play 17 or 18 snaps a game and just wind up with the whole thing covered with stickers. Because then the tackle comes out, he like widens a split, and he's like, all right, well, I can move, so I'm coming inside. Widens a split, you bring it back. It's a cat and mouse. And what you have to have at some point is, I've got a grown man tackle, and the one thing I can work against you is no matter how good you are, you're still 18, and I got my mitts on you. See, that's what you, there's a counter to it. You just got to go execute. There's a role, man, for a true freshman on the edge who's got that get off. There is a role, and boy, can South Carolina use it. So, yeah, if they had helmet stickers, there's a way for a kid just to get the helmet slap full up with them. But it's got to be that special kid off the edge, and there's a role for him, absolutely. So we're going to break. We'll come out, wrap it up on Tuesday next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
You know, I've gotten kind of frustrated in the last couple of days as national people have called me and, you know, hey, what's your contract situation like? And I'm here. And I'm all in. And Julie's all in. And, yeah, I loved Ted Carter. I love Trev. And I came because of them. But I came to be at the University of Nebraska. And I've loved the people that I've met. And we're not going anywhere.
Matt Rhule, Nebraska head coach. And he is a good coach. He's, as far as I've heard, you know, plenty good guy. He got frustrated and started, you know, thrashing about in Carolina. And that certainly didn't work. But there's all kinds of dysfunction there. I was talking about this yesterday, the Carolina Panthers, and you talk about leadership. That's ownership. In the NFL, it's ownership and it's veterans. In college football, it's what Matt Rhule's talking about. Trevor Alberts was the guy who hired him, now he's left. And so Matt Rhule's getting questions about his job. Hey, there'll be a new AD, and he didn't hire you. And he was like, we're here. Me and my wife, we're in. Hope my new boss is in, but we're in. Believe me, I'm not upset. I wish he was still here. Great guy. I got hired by Nebraska, not Trev Alberts. So that's the environment he's in. And it's a brutally tough conference. Oh, yeah. And then those other teams are coming in now. See, Nebraska is in the tough spot, like I've mentioned with Mississippi State. It just got two teams tougher for Mississippi State in the SEC. Georgia looks around and is like, well, we're playing somebody hard. So I guess it'll be Oklahoma this week. Or, well, we're playing somebody hard. It's Texas. But they ain't scared. Mississippi State looks at this and is like, you got to be kidding me. Now these two as well. Nebraska is looking around going, I'm just trying to avoid landmines. And now I got to look over there. And now it's Washington, and now it's Oregon. Yeah, it is. Yeah, keep going. Couple more. So there is a version of the Mississippi State situation. And it's nothing really about them. It's where they either their station kind of is in college football, or at least it is right now, and it kind of has settled into it, like Nebraska. It just got a lot more difficult for a couple of programs, and they are example 1 and 1A, I would certainly say. That is brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net, and that's what matters to me. Heath, how's it Tuesday?
It's good, Chuck. You know, I've been going through more details here out of this Clemson lawsuit. Again, for those of you who are joining us at this point in the program who might not have heard in the open to the hour, Clemson's filed a lawsuit against the ACC in Pickens County, South Carolina, becoming the second ACC school to file along with FSU. What's interesting about it, Chuck, is that they seem to be particularly looking to say that we want to be able to shop around. Like, the perception with FSU has been that FSU thinks they have a landing spot. Now, nobody in Big Ten country has ever reported that there is some undying desire for FSU there, but yeah, maybe they might want to get into the state of Florida. So maybe there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge that if you can get free, then we might want to talk. But in the case of Clemson, Clemson does not feel like a Big Ten school at all. It just doesn't.
No.
I'm sorry. Dabo is not a Big Ten culture fit guy. The school is not a culture fit. Nothing about Clemson feels Big Ten. And we've been over it. Right now, the SEC has zero need for Clemson. It's nothing against the school. Just you've got every aspect of what Clemson brings, you've got covered. You don't need Clemson. You don't need to deal Clemson in on the money. There's just no reason to. So in their case, what they're arguing here basically, Chuck, is that they're being unfairly restricted from being able to explore what their options are. And they're also making the contention that they should be allowed to keep any money after they leave, that basically the only thing the ACC has the right to is their games while they're in the ACC. But if they leave, they still have the rights. Again, the deal is in place through 2036, so the whole point of this thing has been you could leave anytime you want,
sure,
but your money stays with us till 2036 if you choose to do so.
We broadcast your home games.
It's really interesting because they're taking a different tack than FSU is. FSU, as you say, is just going for, you guys are corrupt, this conference is trash, blah, blah,
you
blah.
You did nothing for us in December.
Yeah, Clemson is taking a little different position here. And I don't know if that's, you know, again, you and I are neither one attorneys or make any pretense to being. So I have no idea if this is a better strategy or a more effective plan. But it's not just a copy and paste of FSU, and I think that's interesting.
No, my legal expertise is like 51-49, Beth Davenport and Matlock. So appreciate everybody coming here today. David on the ones and twos, spinning gold. Great job. Heath, Rolodex of the Stars, thank you so much. Everybody listening for a couple hours, I appreciate y'all coming here and getting your combo on with us. 22 hours to recharge the batteries, the whole crew, me, you, them, all of us. We're going to be back tomorrow talking college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.